7:05 on News Radio 850 KOA, and you know, we live in a free country, but that doesn't mean things always go right. And of course, we have these two huge stories, which on the surface seem related to each other, and a lot of people are trying to tie them to each other. I'm talking about Michael Brown in Ferguson, killed by police officer Darren Wilson, who was not indicted. And then Eric Garner in Staten Island in New York, who was taken down by what some people describe as a chokehold by police and died of a heart attack shortly thereafter. And a lot of people are discussing two things, whether there are racial issues here and whether there is a consistent nationwide abuse of police power. I want to focus on the second issue primarily with our guest on our VIP line. Aaron Mishlevyak is a New York City criminal defense lawyer, and he's president of the New York State Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. Good morning, Aaron. Thanks for being with us on 850 KOA.
Good morning.
So let's just focus on the Garner situation in New York. And I found your name because I was reading some comments that you had made in an article about what often happens in cases where something bad happens in a confrontation between a civilian and a police. Talk about that.
Well, the question that was posed to me in that with respect to that article had to do with, do police officers essentially get a break in the grand jury? And I think the way to view this is that, not surprisingly, police officers are often considered more credible by some potential grand jurors and judges in other legal proceedings. So that if they come in and testify, which in New York, and by the way, in Colorado, New York and Colorado are two of the states that have the best grand jury procedures from the defense perspective, because a defendant can go in and actually tell their side of the story if they choose to do it. But so in New York, the officer, Daniel Pantaleo, did take advantage of that and testified, told his side of the story, explained the videos. We know this from news accounts based on conversations with his lawyer. And I think when an officer does that, particularly in certain communities, grand jurors and at trial jurors will tend to give officers the benefit of the doubt a lot of the time. That can be for a number of reasons. Some of them might be racial. Some of them might be respect for law enforcement, people who put their lives on the line in the jobs that they do. The Staten Island community, in terms of sort of its demographic breakdown and other factors, is known as a borough where a lot of law enforcement people live, who work in the city, and a lot of family members of law enforcement are there for that same reason. So it's a borough where there are a lot of ties within the community itself to the law enforcement community. And so the grand jury that was comprised in this New York case is probably different than, say, for example, the kind of grand jury that would have been put together in the Bronx or Brooklyn, or those kinds of things. So it's one that also, just by their own life experiences and relationships with other people, is one that was probably more likely to be favorable to a police officer.
So one of the things that seems like a big point of contention for people looking at the details of the Eric Garner thing was whether the hold that the policeman used to take down Eric Garner was a choke hold or some other kind of hold that is not allowed by police regulations. Do you have an opinion on that?
You know, I mean, looking at the video, it does seem like it's a choke hold. And you can have a couple of different types of choke holds. You can have one that is a blood choke, which essentially restricts the flow of blood by restricting the arteries. And then you can have an air choke, which applies pressure to the trachea or windpipe or something like that. And, you know, I think a couple of issues came up in seeing press coverage of this. But when you're looking at the video, the officer's arm is clearly around the throat of Mr. Garner. That could be an accident. It could be intentional. It could be negligent. And the NYPD does have a policy and has had a policy, I think, since 1993, that chokeholds are not to be used by their officers. Officers continue to use them. And in this situation, you know, every situation is different, you know. And so part of your question was, is there a widespread problem with excessive force by the police, particularly, you know, arguably in minority communities? But in this specific situation, when you're looking at that video, what people should know as background is that officers have been told not to do what this officer was doing. And that may not, you know, there are different levels of criminal intent. One is intentionally committing a murder, but then there's also something in New York State law called criminally negligent homicide. And for that, somebody just has to act with negligence, a gross deviation from what somebody would consider standard procedure. So in some ways, by definition, this officer was negligent because he was, you know, in my view, looking at the video, doing something that was in violation of NYPD procedure. It's not criminally outlawed to do what he did, but the fact that it looks like he's violating police procedure, you know, that's evidence of negligence.
So knowing only what we know, not you and I having not seen everything that the grand jury saw, but just knowing what you know, do you think the grand jury was wrong? If the only facts there were the facts that you know, would you say that the grand jury was wrong?
I would say it was wrong because of the standard of proof that's required to pass an indictment. And that's that there has to be sufficient evidence to believe that a crime was committed. It's not proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And in this case, you know, knowing what I know, and here, you know, we all have the advantage of looking at the video, it does look like this is a chokehold that is barred by NYPD practice. This is not a person who is trying to run away. It's not a person throwing a punch. It's not a person who's in possession of a weapon. There are several police officers standing around this guy. And he's a big guy, there's no question, and he is flailing his arms. But with a crowd of police, when you know that the chokehold is banned by your own department, there have to be alternatives for arresting someone like this who's only suspected of a misdemeanor offense, which is selling cigarettes that weren't taxed properly.
You know? Yeah, and in fact, I'm going to talk about that later on in this hour.
Account, yeah. It seems like there was sufficient evidence for there to have been an indictment on some kind of charge. Maybe not murder, certainly not murder in the second degree, which is a specific intent crime. Maybe not manslaughter or something involving some recklessness standards. But something involving negligence, it seems like there was at least sufficient proof. Now, you know, we are operating to some degree in the dark. The grand jury is a secret proceeding. There were dozens of witnesses who went and testified, including we don't know specifically who they are, but medical witnesses who treated Mr. Garner, witnesses at the scene, probably some witnesses even on things like police procedure, expert types of witnesses. And there were 3 to 4 videos that it sounds like were put into the grand jury. So we know there was a whole bunch of evidence that many of us haven't heard, but As I think we all recognize, particularly in the wake of something like the Ray Rice incident, video is powerful. And in this case, everybody can see the 3 or 4 videos that were taken of the incident as it went down. And those are the most significant pieces of proof in the case, I think.
I agree with you. And the first video that came out that everybody has seen was bad enough. But some of the other videos that came out later were for me, even worse. I mean, they've got Eric Garner lying unconscious on his side. Yeah. I can't tell that he's breathing. And the cops are all they're doing is holding him down. They're not trying to help him at all. And to me, this is just a travesty. But I also think I've got just 30 seconds here. Let me get your quick take on this, Aaron. I think that the Garner situation and the Michael Brown situation are completely different. Give me 30 quick seconds on that.
Well, they are different in some ways, but I think there is enough of some similar themes that it's good that they're being tied for a national conversation. You know, in these situations, there's politics and there's law. And what we'd like as a society is to have rule of law dictate, regardless of who you are, whether you're the victim or somebody like a police officer who's being charged with a crime. And I think the concern, especially with these two incidents, is that politics are playing a role, that the identities of the victims and the alleged perpetrators are influencing how the grand jurors look at the facts and how prosecutors are presenting the evidence of what the facts are. And so I think that's the common theme. There's also some interesting issues there about the grand jury, which really is one of the most important protections that Americans have. It's a Fifth Amendment protection. The founding fathers felt this was so important that they put it into the Constitution. And again, you know, to your credit, Colorado and New York happen to have two of the strongest grand jury proceedings in the country. As a result of that,
Aaron Mishlevyak, I'm sorry, I've got to leave it there. Very late on That's a break. Okay. I appreciate your time this morning. Aaron Mishlevyak is a New York City criminal defense lawyer, and he's president of the New York State Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. His website, you want to check him out, fmamlaw.com. Thanks again, Aaron. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.